Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
It's Tuesday, August 16th. I'm Oscar Ramirez in Los Angeles, and this is The Daily Dive. Streaming companies continue to be frustrated by customers who subscribe to their service, watch the shows they want, then cancel and go to another platform. Competition is stiff for the streamers, but price-conscious customers are looking for more content and following specific shows rather than staying loyal to any one service. Sarah Krause, streaming reporter at The Wall Street Journal, joins us for how customer loyalty is declining at the top streaming services. Next, as we continue to see low job satisfaction and high burnout rates among workers, and changing policies and priorities from leaders, middle managers are stuck with pressure from both sides and are having a hard time keeping everything on track. Especially hard is implementing return-to-work plans and dealing with turnover. Julia Herbst, senior editor at Fast Company, joins us for why no one wants to be a middle manager anymore. Finally, on the ballot this November, one Southern California county will ask its residents if they want to secede from the state. Feeling like they aren't getting enough funding, San Bernardino County will ask voters if they want them to study all options to obtain its fair share of state and federal resources, up to and including secession. Danny Angiano, reporter at The Guardian US, joins us for how residents feel and the hard road ahead to actually break away. It's news without the noise. Let's dive in.
So that's people who are cycling through multiple subscriptions and causing a challenge for the streaming services who have to pay to acquire the same customer often over and over again.
Joining us now is Sarah Krause, streaming reporter at The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for joining us, Sarah.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's talk about what's going on with these big streamers right now. Customer loyalty seems to be an issue. You know, we've been all been following the story of Netflix losing 2 million subscribers at once, and people were really worried what was going to happen in their latest numbers. They did so much better. They only lost about 1 million subscribers. But we're seeing this kind of across the board, the customer loyalty. What people are doing, what's frustrating for these companies is that people are signing up for something, watching whatever they can, canceling, and then leaving. Maybe they'll come back, maybe they won't. And just kind of this cyclical nature of it is really frustrating for them. So, Sarah, tell us a little bit more about it.
Yeah, so you have a moment in streaming where there are so many options available. There are all different apps now available that consumers are getting a little savvier about what they actually decide to pay for and how they sort of time their subscription. So they'll watch a show intensely on one service and then turn off that service and move on to watch another show on another service. And so overall across the industry, monthly customer defections are on the rise and you see this sort of steady uptick. But below the surface, there's this sort of growing pool of subscribers who are regularly sort of turning off multiple subscriptions. So just to give you a sense in terms of numbers, some 19% of subscribers to premium services, whether that's Netflix, Hulu, Apple TV, they canceled 3 or more subscriptions in the 2 years up to June. So that's people who are cycling through multiple subscriptions and causing a challenge for the streaming services who have to pay to acquire the same customer often over and over again. And it really puts a fine point on the importance of having content that people want to not only sign up to pay for in the first place, but stick around to keep watching.
Yeah. Yeah. And what we saw in the last couple of years, obviously, is a bunch of new streaming services came online. A lot of them were really trying to attract new customers, so the price point was a little lower. They'd had, you know, launches of big shows and whatnot. We all went through the pandemic and were at home and wanted a lot of stuff to watch. So a lot of these streamers were really getting a lot of good business on it. And the fact of the matter is that canceling right now is so easy. It's not like a cable company where they're harassing you or calling you, giving you better offers, you know, a deal, hey, we'll lower your rate just so you can stick with us. I mean, right now you just have to click to cancel. And that's probably one of the biggest things. It's just so easy to do.
That's part of it for sure. And it's interesting because that ability is what gave streaming an edge over cable for so long. That was the appeal, was you can hop on over. It's a monthly commitment. It's not something that you're tied into under long-term contracts that are messy and hard to get out of. You can just come in and come out. Now we're at a point in terms of competition and people returning to everyday lives and economic pressures being such that consumers are really thinking about how they're spending their budget, their entertainment budget, while also returning to other activities outside the home. So you have all these pressure points at once, and now they're using that same flexibility that made streaming attractive in the first place to turn it off to the detriment of the companies that are trying to retain their business.
And all this is not to say that people don't want streaming content. They actually do. The appetite for it does remain high, and we're seeing more subscriptions rising all the time. It's just people are being a lot more picky and choosy with what they want and what they want to stick with, you know? Just to the point of the whole thing, right? When you're talking about these big shows, let's say like a Stranger Things releasing in two parts, well, I'll stick with that service for about 3 months and watch a bunch of other stuff in between. Once I'm done, I'll cancel it for a little while and move on to another one. And that's kind of that cycle.
That's right. And you have households that are always sort of renegotiating what their current lineup of streaming services are going to be. You may have families, you know, I spoke with one in my story that has a core four services and then one that they have on rotation. And so you're right that overall the number of subscriptions per person is on the rise, but within those services, there's more competition for new customers and more sort of churn is a jargony word for it, but there's more sort of floating in and out and customers sort of creating a new behavior around how they manage their streaming services.
Yeah. And myself, you know, I have just about every streaming service because of my work, because of my wife's work. You know, we need to be up on a lot of content and things like that. So, but there's constantly stretches where we're not watching a service and we're like, oh man, we have this service too. Let's try to watch something, you know? So there's constantly these ebbs and flows where we're not watching anything despite paying for it. And when it comes to the actions of the big companies, you know, we're looking right now at HBO Max and Discovery Plus. They're going to be combining a lot of their content into one streaming service. And for them, they say, you know, this is exactly the reason why. We need to have so much content that hopefully multiple members of the family are using the service, makes it stickier, and they'll stick with us longer.
That's right. And I think there is fairly acute competition to be in that core group of streaming services that people don't think about turning off, right? And so I think that's a place where Disney Plus has had a lot of strengths. They have a lot of franchises and things that if you're a parent, you're going to just have it for your kids because they watch the same movie over and over again. With other broader streaming services, Netflix, you've seen, try to have something for everyone. I think there's a push to say, how do I make sure that I'm one of that group of the default and not one of the sort of services that is cycled in and out of?
Sarah Krause, streaming reporter at The Wall Street Journal. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
We're just seeing that they haven't really been trained in this moment, right? So they're used to counting, you know, butts in seats, right? How many hours you're sitting at your desk as a way to tell how hard someone is working. And that just really isn't an option right now.
Joining us now is Julia Herbst, senior editor at Fast Company. Thanks for joining us, Julia.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's talk about what we're seeing in the workplace right now, coming off of the pandemic and going through the great resignation and all that. It's been a pretty tough go. We've seen some lower job satisfaction in some industries. Burnout rates are very high. We were talking a lot about that throughout the pandemic. And, you know, some are feeling overwhelmed, undervalued. But where we're really seeing a lot of this make a real impact is right in the middle with the middle managers. So, you know, not necessarily the big CEOs or the people at the bottom. It's the person stuck in the middle trying to kind of make the business happen between everybody. And, you know, we've always heard the jokes of the middle managers and everything like that. But man, do they have it hard right now. So, Julia, tell us a little bit more about it.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, I don't think it's ever been easy to be a middle manager, right? There always have been kind of conflicting priorities between the C-suite and then everybody else at a company. But I definitely think it's gotten harder recently. And that's, you know, sort of why we wanted to write this piece, was just to understand, you know, between the Great Resignation, like you mentioned, this really seismic change that has happened in most workplaces, you know, where there are knowledge workers who can theoretically do their work, you know, remotely or in a hybrid setting. All of these things have just changed what it's like to be a worker. And then the middle manager is stuck in between. So in some cases, they're having to oversee the return to office or, you know, navigate this new moment in the workplace. But they're also dealing with the fact that they've probably lost a number of people on their team. So they're trying to get the same amount of work done with a smaller team and also prevent more people from leaving at the same time. There's this potential recession on the horizon, which is also happening and putting pressure on those middle managers to, you know, get more work done. And then also we're just seeing that they haven't really been trained in this moment, right? So they're used to counting, you know, butts in seats, right? How many hours you're sitting at your desk as a way to tell how hard someone is working. And that just really isn't an option right now.
Let's talk about the remote work experience right now that's happening, because that's such a huge part of it. It's such a huge part of why the Great Resignation was happening, right? People wanted that flexibility. They wanted to be home. Mm-hmm. They get rid of that commute and all. And that's been a pretty tough part, because it kind of showed that it does work. You know, people can work remotely. The technology exists. Everything about it can work. But we're seeing, as the pandemic has died down a little bit more now, a lot of managers, a lot of employers really wanting people to come back. And that's a really hard thing to navigate, especially for these middle managers who really have to interact with those day-to-day workers and enforce those policies.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think a lot of middle managers are really stuck in the middle between having to execute these kind of return to hybrid or return to fully in the office plans that are frankly fairly unpopular for folks. I mean, once you offer flexibility and, you know, once people prove that they really can, in most instances, do their job remotely, I think it's hard to say, okay, but now we need you back in the office because we like seeing your face or something like that. And so I think, you know, if you haven't been really clear about like the type of work you want to do communally in one place together and why it's important to do that, then you're sort of setting these middle managers up for failure, right? Because they're stuck in the middle trying to enact this policy that people don't necessarily like.
Let's talk a little bit about turnover, because employees at the bottom, let's say, you know, they're leaving these jobs and then managers are left to hire more people, still kind of run the day-to-day business. And that's pretty tough. But then the managers themselves are also experiencing this burnout because of those very same things. And they're quitting also in some instances.
Yeah, I think it can be kind of a dangerous cycle that you can get into, right? You know, you have a few people leave and then suddenly there's more pressure on the people who are remaining and then they leave and you can get kind of sucked into the vortex or into people quitting, you know, and I think it's more important than ever to think about like, what are the things that employees want? You know, how do they create meaning and what feels meaningful in terms of type of work? And then how are you going to reward high performers?
Shaping corporate culture is another thing that our middle managers are tasked with. And, you know, when you're seeing these high rates of turnover, you're seeing this hybrid workforce, that can be really tough to do. And who knows what that corporate culture is now, right? Maybe that's shifted also.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think a lot of companies and, you know, high-level executives need to be thinking about these sort of things and, you know, what they want company culture to look like. Like, it obviously could be very different if you're not all in the same place, if you're remote, or some employees are hybrid, they're in 2 days a week, other employees are never in at all. Like, all of these changes are very consequential and need to be thought through intentionally. I think what happens is sometimes that burden is placed on the middle manager to do, you know, like to sort of come up with the policy and sort of make it happen, as opposed to like a senior level person doing that. And that can be a problem too, right? It needs to be sort of a thing that everybody is on board with and working together to create, especially if you're trying to create a new, different version of culture.
As we see the economy hopefully getting better, but you know, we haven't seen those numbers bear out just yet. Inflation is really high. There's fears of a recession. Their roles are going to be shifting even more possibly into this other stuff. You know, who knows if companies are going to have to start laying off people. You know, the roles of these managers are going to be constantly moving.
Yeah, I think that's true. It's a really uncertain time. You know, I mean, there's still a lot of demand, you know, and people looking for jobs and getting new jobs and all of that, which is great. But it's definitely a period where there's a lot of turnover still happening. So I think the role of the middle manager is more crucial than ever if you have a big influx of people coming and going, right, and setting what that culture is and sort of helping maintain it. But yeah, I mean, you're also putting a lot then on those folks stuck in the middle. And so it's about sort of being really clear about what company culture is and then also giving them the tools and the support and the resources to really make a culture that people want to be part of.
Julia Herbst, senior editor at Fast Company, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. oracle.com/strategic.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
People move out here for a quality of life, but the state decides they want to build a new prison. They pick a spot in San Bernardino County. You want to drop a bunch of a truckload of parolees out and you give them vouchers. It's cheaper to move here when there's businesses where they can get a job, so they dump them here.
Joining us now is Danny Angiano, reporter at The Guardian US. Thanks for joining us, Danny.
Happy to be here.
Well, let's talk about an interesting story popping up in the news right now in California, in Southern California specifically. We're looking at San Bernardino County, and coming up on the ballot in November, there's an interesting question there posed to voters, and it's basically asking if the residents want the board to study and advocate for all options to obtain the county's fair share of state funding up and to including secession from the state of California. Now, in California, there's this kind of a long history of some of this stuff going on, people wanting to secede from the state. It's a huge state, obviously, but it's popping up again, and it's kind of worth talking about. So, Danny, tell us a little bit more about it.
Sure. So, in San Bernardino County, which is just east of Los Angeles, officials there are talking about leaving the state. And why that's happening is an interesting question, and one we see across California whenever this issue comes up. So San Bernardino is a sprawling county. It's massive. It stretches across much of the southern part of the state, and it's grown a lot. It's one of the fastest growing metro areas in the U.S. But officials there say the state isn't offering adequate support to meet this growing population. They say the state isn't investing in prisons and state hospitals and courthouses. They point to the fact that they have several vacancies for judges at a time their population is expanding and they need to accommodate that. So because of that, there's this sort of sense of being ignored by the state. They're talking about taking drastic measures. They say they just want their fair share of funding and that secession is, you know, a worst case scenario, but they're definitely talking about it.
To be clear with this, what's going up on the ballot is not that they will secede from the state right away. This is looking into what they can do to get more of that funding. And the ultimate thing, if they had to go that far, would be seceding from the state.
Exactly. Yeah. They know that that's a dramatic thing to say. That's a dramatic possibility to discuss leaving the state entirely. But this measure would not allow them to leave the state. There are a lot of more complicated things that would need to happen. They're just asking residents, do you want us to look into this, collect data? But it is a dramatic question, and it is designed to draw attention, which it has, to the issues that they're talking about and the ways that they feel the state is falling short.
There's a local real estate businessman who was kind of behind this ballot measure. He's done some surveys, and in those surveys, they've gotten some pretty good numbers, at least over 50% of people saying they would like to secede from the state if they could right now. They disapprove of the job that the California state legislature is doing. They want them to fight for their fair share of revenue. I mean, all those numbers are, I mean, those questions in and of themselves will lend themselves to, you know, yes, let's fight. But what kind of support are we seeing for this?
We don't know exactly. What we do know is that there are mayors who have gone forward and said that they support this. And as you mentioned, there's this real estate developer who's brought this up to the board, who's been an advocate for this. And he says, you know, Fixum polling has indicated that there, you know, 53% of people would vote for secession. But we kind of have to take that with a grain of salt because experts say we can't read too much into early polling, and that you have to be kind of cautious when it comes to looking at data from advocates from any one side. But I think what is clear is that lots of people in San Bernardino County agree that they need more resources. I think that part has, it appears to have widespread acknowledgement and support. Yeah. Where the disagreement comes in is whether this is the right route. And as we saw at the recent Board of Supervisors meeting, some people were standing up to say that they don't think it's the right route, that this isn't the most effective way to go about achieving the county's goals.
It's going to be really, really hard to secede from the state of California. I mean, you need to ask Congress for permission to make San Bernardino County a new state. I mean, all of that really points to the big answer of no, it's not going to happen. So voters can approve to study this and look into it. It's still going to be a really hard sell to happen. And, you know, as you mentioned earlier, you know, going back into kind of the history of California, we've seen these attempts before. None of them have panned out.
Experts warn that this is basically impossible what they're trying to do. You know, it would require, like you mentioned, it would require approval from the state legislature. It would then require approval from Congress, and you know how difficult it is to get things done at the national level these days. But we also have the history of California, the fact that these conversations have come up time and time again for essentially, you know, more than a century from the time of the state's founding. Where I'm from, up in Northern California, there's been talk of the state of Jefferson since, I think, going back to the 40s. And we've seen action on the county level in Northern California, you know, county boards of supervisors expressing their support for this idea of seceding from the state and forming the state of Jefferson. But that kind of action on the county level, whether it be a board of supervisors passing an ordinance or some kind of statement or putting a measure on the ballot, is very different than actually achieving it. And basically what experts say is that it's pretty much impossible, and right, the talk about this is really just designed to get headlines.
Danny Angiano, reporter at The Guardian US, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
That's it for today. Join us on social media, at Daily Dive Pod on both Twitter and Instagram. Leave us a comment, give us a rating, and tell us the stories that you're interested in. Follow us on iHeartRadio or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. This episode of The Daily Dive is produced by Victor Wright and engineered by Tony Sorrentino. I'm Oscar Ramirez, and this was your Daily Dive.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.